Hey, Pat.
Hey, Joel.
Welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
It's episode 4.
Number 4.
We upgraded our setup quite a bit here.
You've added some serious equipment.
I know. We got a mixer. We got mic arms. Our mixer could do 4 mics. We could have a guest even.
The mic arms are clutch. I'm not leaning. I'm not holding.
Yeah, I mean, like, the mic's right in front of our face. You're not leaning over. I mean, even adjust my mic arm so I can sit back even a little bit further.
I will probably turn my head, like, unwittingly, like, and be talking away from the mic at some points.
It'll happen. But, you know, we can always raise the volume. There's a lot of knobs on this thing. I know what all of 3 of them do, I think, right now. So,
but it looks professional.
It does look very professional. I know people have been podcasting for years that don't look this professional. They got like a Yeti blue ball mic sitting on the middle of their table and 5 people talking into 1 mic. I mean, I heard we could even get Skype up on here, plug the computer back into this, and have someone up on Skype that is in our conversation.
Oh, that,
like,
is clutch.
We could get real professional up in here.
We're
going to start pretty basic, though.
Yeah, we'll start baby steps, but you could have potential for an international show.
Oh, international. We could become a business podcast. We'd have to change the name and probably, like, not recognize it as the Mental Fogcast anymore, because people would listen to previous episodes and go, I don't know if I want to be on that.
Yeah, definitely don't want to be on that.
Yeah, so if we change that would be quite different.
Yeah.
So what you been up to? It's been 2 months. You've gotten married. You went back to work after your nice, lush, month off of work with your government job.
Yep. I had a month off. Yep. I had, 3 weeks vacation to play with, and then it was over the holiday. So it was about a month off. We did the wedding, and then we did a honeymoon in Jamaica, which was a ton of fun. Really hot.
Yeah.
90s, every day.
So my boss just went to Jamaica for his 15-year anniversary. And I have to ask, did you go to, there's some place, it's, near the most beautiful beach on the face of the planet. I think it's called, Rick's Bar, and there's, 5 different things that you can dive into a lagoon from?
Yes.
You went there?
We went, yeah, Rick's Cafe.
Rick's Cafe. He bragged about it. He did the third highest jump, which is, there was 2 jumps higher than that, one off of an outlook for a pirate ship too.
Yes, which I don't think the highest, I don't think the public is allowed to jump off of that one. There are 5, it's cliff jumping right into the ocean. And we took, it was a sailboat catamaran cruise there. And it's a world famous touristy bar. And, you buy a beer, and then you can cliff jump right into the ocean. So
he said the smallest was 3 feet. That would be about my level of cliff jumping into the ocean. He showed me the pictures. They looked quite intense. I don't even know if I could go to the 10-foot one. Did you do any cliff jumping?
I did. I did the 10-foot, and I did the next step up. And I think it was 25. I think it was 25 and then 35 were the ones that were available to the public. So I did 25. We ran out of time because we only had an hour. If I had more time, I would have done the 35. But I started with the 10. You know, you got to build up. You got to be okay, how? Because I've done cliff diving before, and I think the one we did was actually higher than this one. It's intimidating when you're standing 25 plus feet over the ledge. But then there was this kid. He had to be maybe 12. He was going off the top. And so everyone else was oh, we got to do it. But there were a lot of people that would look and were nope, not doing it, not doing it.
There was one other thing he said he did, that there was some lake or something that's got this algae that grows in it that when you jump in, it reacts to touch, so it lights up. So you can swim your arms and it glows
it
around
up.
You.
We didn't do that, but I don't think I would have done that even if that was an option. I'm not messing with algae. Especially in Jamaica.
I'm not sure if it was an algae or a fish, but he told me all about that. And he had a picture of it, and it looked really cool.
So he must have been in Nigril, which we were on Nigril. It's like the west coast of
Jamaica. He took a bus out there, so he wasn't there, but the one day from the resort they were in, they took a bus there. He said it was like an hour and a half on a bus to get to where they were.
Okay. Yeah, that's what, because I think Jamaica has one airport. It's Montego Bay, which is...
I think that's actually where he stayed, is Montego Bay.
That's one, I think, one of the most popular places, because they have beautiful beaches in Montego Bay. Nigril is, like, also super popular with all the all-inclusive locations, because they have a stretch, I think they said it's 7 miles of white sand beaches. And they're all like Sandals has multiple locations there, and we were at Couples, and Couples Swept Away, and they Couples owns a couple of the all-inclusive resorts too. Everything's right on the beach, and it really is, it's beautiful with the sunset because it's faces west, so it's really, really awesome.
That does sound awesome.
It was warm. And the sunset, it rained a good amount. It's kind of like what Florida is like. It rains once a day,
it's heavy. Humid.
Yeah. But it will be like maybe half an hour to an hour.
That's not bad, though.
Yeah. So that was like, we did almost the same thing. Like every day we would get up, do like a lot of water sports. And it rained like mid-afternoon. So we would do like the pool bar, have drinks, and then like when it would rain, it was like, that's nap time.
So, take a nap. I don't think we've talked since before the wedding, so I gotta bring up your bachelor party for a quick moment. How much cocaine and weed were you offered walking down the streets of Jamaica? I heard the weed is a lot.
Yes, we were. Yeah, which like when before we went, I had talked to people who had gone to Jamaica, and they're like, there are people who are going to offer you stuff. Yes, that is true. We took a bus, so we flew into Montego Bay. The resort has a bus lined up for you, and within 45 minutes, someone offered us weed. And a lot of people make the pitch that it's healthier down there, it's more natural down there. And then they have, since they have like the stretch of 7 miles of beach, they have people just walking up and down the beach, a ton of locals and stuff, and then they can't, like, the resorts can't kick people off the beach, but they have many people who just walk up and down, who sell what they call cigarettes, air quotes. So they're, yes, that all the time. We did not partake. And we actually heard, we were there, there was another couple honeymooning, and he said that, I think it was his brother-in-law had gone, or someone they knew went to the same resort and had bought edibles from some guy, and they said they spent like 2 days in like the room staring at the ceiling. And I was like, you spent all this money for an all-inclusive, but you spent 2 days.
Enjoy it.
Yeah, you didn't enjoy it. And we're like, yeah, I will not partake.
Well, for those of you listening in, the reference was to a bachelor party down in Florida. We went out in South Beach one night, and 10 o'clock hit, and we were walking down the packed roads of Miami, and everyone we walked by were like, coke weed? Weed code? Coke weed?
Yeah.
Coke weed? We did not partake in any of that, but everywhere you walk after 10 o'clock at night, someone is trying to get you to buy drugs from them.
I didn't know that. I guess I knew, like, they always joke about Miami being a big cocaine town, but it was kind of like we're out in the open, that bunch of just drug dealers trying to offer tourists drugs. But
instead, we ended up at Senior Frogs, and most people had yards of beer, and I am so glad I didn't. And at one point, I was thinking of having a yard of a Moscow Mule. I would have died that night, I think.
You would have drank that. I don't know how. You know how much ginger beer would be in
so much ginger.
A yard?
So much ginger. It's probably heavier on the other drinks in it than the ginger beer to cut down. God.
It would, like, you would have been shit-faced.
Yeah.
And then your stomach would just be, like, ruined.
The eye candy, the frozen drink with Bacardi 151, already hit me hard that night, so.
Yes, a lot of frozen drinks.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a very fun trip.
It was a fun trip. It was a lot of fun.
So, I have something I want to do, and it's not going to be as fun as Florida. I'd like to get a yearly trip together somewhere in upstate New York so we don't need to travel as far. A guy's weekend at a cabin. Just go to a cabin, have bonfires, beer, games.
I'd definitely be down for that. I know, like, Kayleen's dad does something similar to that. They have, like, an annual guy's golf outing, and it's been the same guys going for, like, 20-plus years.
Could you get your brother to come up?
Yeah. Yeah, that would be really, really cool. That was, we almost did that for the bachelor party. Because that would be...
Your brother wasn't going to allow that to happen. He wanted to go to Florida for his birthday.
It was his birthday.
For his birthday.
For his own birthday.
And yeah. He happened to just... It was the same time as the bachelor party, so that's where we were going.
Look at that coincidence.
I do got to say, not that you could enjoy it that much, but the time out on the pontoon boat in the sand drift was probably the most fun of the weekend for me. I don't think if it was for you, Mr. I'm going to puke in the ocean.
Yeah. No, it was really fun for the first hour and a half, and then, I don't know, dehydration, hungover on a boat.
It's because you should have got some Bud Heavies, man.
No.
The Bud Heavies were carrying me through that morning.
That's what did it to me when I tried to drink a Bud Heavy. I was doing fine until I had, like, we were there for, like, an hour and a half, and you guys were all, like, peer pressure, like, oh, you got to drink now. I was like, no. And then,
you got done in.
It was downhill then, very, very quickly.
Yes, it was. And then we went to that horrible, horrible restaurant for lunch. But we were all just so hungry.
Yeah, that was not good.
No.
I don't know what that was.
Yeah.
It was like a crappy sports bar chain.
It was a very crappy sports bar. Yeah. Extremely crappy.
Not good. Not good food. Not what I needed at that present time.
No. Not at all.
It was fun.
That was fun.
Florida was fun. I hadn't taken a plane in several years. I hadn't traveled. And it was also a good, like, trip to start before we did Jamaica for, like, international travel.
Yeah. That was a real fun trip.
Yeah. Did you get reimbursed for your travel insurance?
Yeah, so
insurance?
That look I just had was I forgot to finish filing for the travel insurance, but
what's
if
the time
I do,
frame?
I don't know.
Is it going to be, like, 30 days or something?
I don't know. So Emmy signed me up for it, and then she's like, you got to do this. And I was like, all right, here's the information. Oh, now you need to provide all this extra paperwork. And I'm like, the hassle's not worth the $50. If it was, like, $500, yeah, I'd be going out of my way for it.
That's how they get you. You got to submit all the documentation. And I
so
guarantee
rough.
You most people are like, nah.
No, it's so rough.
We got delayed. We almost didn't make it back to Rochester. So we were in Montego Bay, and we were supposed to leave at, like, 3-something. We didn't leave, I think, till, like, 5 or after 5. And the flight went into Atlanta, and we were supposed to get in at, like, 7-ish. And then our flight to Rochester was 9:48. And it was the same exact plane. It was the same exact flight that we took.
Yeah, the late flight.
Yeah, it's
and
the
you
latest
had to get
flight.
From, like, Terminal F to Terminal
yes.
A
yes.
in...
So we had over 2 hours planned. We landed in Atlanta at 8:50. So we had less than an hour to go through customs, check our bag. We had to pick up our bag from baggage claim, recheck our bag, go back through security, and then we went from... We were in gate F, and we had to go to A.
Yeah.
So it was the farthest possible try. And when we landed, Delta automatically switched our flights from the trip to Rochester that night. They automatically rebooked us to the next morning into Detroit, and then we had a layover in Detroit back to Rochester. So we had 50 minutes, and we're like, let's give it a good old college try.
Did you pull it off?
We pulled it off. We were the crazy people running. We ran through customs. And it went pretty quickly in customs. We were in the United States citizens, and we didn't bring back anything, so we were right through. The security, they had people, like, just rushing because they knew our flight was over an hour and a half delayed, so they had Delta and, like, all the other flights that had people, like, trying to pull people and direct people where to go. And we were at, like, the escalator on the tram, and people were standing. I was that guy who picked up my bag and pushed through people, was like, sorry, and we were running up, and there was a pilot next to us, and he's like, where are you guys trying to get to? And we're like, gate A, and we were at gate F, and we had under 20 minutes, and we're like, are we gonna make it? And he's like, I don't think so. But we were sprinting down terminal A, and of course we were like the last terminal. I was I was dripping sweat. I was in a dead sprint. I almost ran over a child because he came out of nowhere, and I was pulling our carry-on luggage. But we made it to the gate, and the guy was about to close the door. He was on the phone with the flight attendants, and he was like, I could overhear him saying, I don't know. Their flight, they were coming in from flight. I think we were like 304. They're like, they were on 304 and they were on in Jamaica and they got delayed. So I don't think they're coming. And I was like, that's us. I'm like, let me on this plane. And he's like, you guys just made it. And we just got in, and the flight, I was dripping sweat. And so was Kayleen. And the flight attendants are like, do you guys need water? And I was like, yes, I need water. We just sprinted the entire Atlanta airport.
But here's the important question. Did you get that Comfort Plus?
No.
No.
Oh, here's the worst thing. So when we were in Jamaica, I was like, the flight was like delayed 5 minutes, 10 minutes, and kept going. And I went up and I was like, look, you have us. We were like all the way in the back of the plane.
Give us that Comfort
Plus.
I
was like, do you have first class or comfort class? Because I'm going to have under an hour to get to my next connecting flight. And the lady was like, it's kind of nice, but she's like, oh, don't worry about it. They'll just book you on the next available flight. And I was like, no.
That's tomorrow.
That's the last flight to Rochester. I know that's the last. And she like looked it up. She goes, oh, that's right. She goes, oh, don't worry. If you have to stay in a hotel. I was like, no, look and check, please, if you have a first class or a comfort plus. And she's like, oh, we don't have any available. And when we got on the flight, there were two seats available. We were like the last people to board because we were all the way in the back, and there were two. I would swear that lady just was like, nah, I'm not giving it. Because I was like, I'm going to have to run. Give me those seats that are the closest to the door. But the problem was everyone was in the same situation because the pilot came on and said, before we took off, he's like, I know we're behind. He goes, I'm going to try and make up speed, and he's like, I know everyone is trying to catch connecting flights, and I think we got, I don't know if they let us have free internet or if it was free internet for international, but they let everyone have the Wi-Fi to check their flights. And then there was a storm over Florida, so the pilot actually lost time in the air
because he had to
do a zigzag like through Florida to dodge this big storm. So it was like everything that could go wrong was going wrong, but We made it with like a minute or less to spare because he was hanging up the phone to be I'm closing the door.
Oh no!
But the flight back to Rochester, it was like less than half full, and the flight attendants were like, "Oh, a lot of people missed it." I was like, "We must have been like the only people to have made it because there was some storm." They told us there was a storm in Atlanta, but when we got into Atlanta, it was fine. I think it was Florida. Had the storm.
And you
had
to guide around that storm.
Yeah. But, so we got the travel insurance. I was like, dual got travel insurance. We got delayed over an hour. We definitely should be able to submit. And our bag didn't make the flight. No.
That's even more travel insurance.
That's even more travel insurance. No. Because, well, I have to go look. It's probably too late to submit something. But we talked to our travel agent, and I was like, we were delayed, and we didn't get our bag. It was, if the bag was delayed for 24 hours, and Delta delivered it to the apartment, and they delivered it just before 24 hours. So I can't complain. They delivered it right to the door the next day. But we got in very late. On a Wednesday morning, it was like 1 a.m., and we both went back to work on Thursday.
That's rough.
It was rough. But I was like, great, we're the crazy people. You know, you always look at the people in the airport running, and you're like, you should have planned better with your flights. No.
Now you're like, oh, shit, it's not planning better.
Yeah.
This is just how.
That's just how it happened. We had, I think, almost 3 hours originally, layover in Atlanta, and it just, like, one storm backed everything up.
Gone.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Well, as we're tailing up, catching up from the last time, and we're finishing Flight Talk, the new podcast about Delta, I'm going to try to do actual segments this time, so we're going to take a break in a moment, but real quick before that break, let me take an ad break. Delta, Comfort Plus. If you can fly it, fucking fly it. It's comfortable. And we're back. So I'm trying to make it like more official, do some transitions, have segments. We're going to do more than just a random thought conversation as we've been having. But as we enter segment two, I just want to make it clear. Delta in no way is sponsoring this podcast. No. That was not a real ad in which I swore, but really, Delta Comfort Plus was quite comfortable.
Thoroughly enjoyed Delta Comfort Plus.
Yes.
Two thumbs up.
But as we enter segment two, this will be the more random conversation part before our third official part, where we actually have an article to talk about. Like, we both read it and took notes. You've got a computer up. I've got a notepad. But I want to take a moment and go to Game of Thrones, something that's come up every time now, and not actually talk about Game of Thrones, but the author, George R.R. Martin. So I bought a book from him when early on in Game of Thrones called Dream Songs. It's a book of his short stories. I've now read volume one and bought volume one and two on Audible, and I wanted to let you borrow volume one.
Oh.
It's a bunch of short stories by George R.R. Martin. They're real, real good.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
So,
now, question.
Yes.
Were the short stories written before the Game of
Yes,
Thrones?
Yes. Okay. They're all pre-Game of Thrones. Not a single short story in there has anything to do with Game of Thrones.
Okay.
They are just other stories he's written.
Okay.
So,
I was about to say, if he's off writing short stories right now and not finishing those final books.
No, yeah. And then,
time to get him focused.
Yeah. No, he, those are all pre-Game of Thrones. I mean, some of them might have been written around the time the first book, Game of Thrones, came out.
Yeah.
It's a collection of short stories that have come out in magazines or sci-fi books. So, but these are all older short stories. So he's not writing this instead of A Winds of Winter.
We need him focused.
Yes, we do. And as you can see, I've got this other massive book here that I just bought from Barnes & Nobles today.
Looks like a heavy read.
Yeah, it's called The Secret Teachings of All Ages by Manly P. Hall. It's a philosophical book, also about like ancient religions, the Masons and stuff. I've been listening to a lot more music instead of podcasts. I've been trying to do more positive stuff because so many of the podcasts and the news are dark lately. I can't keep listening to it.
100% agree with that.
And there's a rapper I was listening to called Apathy is his name, and he put out an album last year. He's a Freemason, and his last album kind of was esoteric. It was about magic and stuff like that. So a couple of his songs end with either quotes from things or from movies, and one of the quotes really caught my eye. I looked up the song. It's called Spellbook, I think, is the name of the song. I'll confirm that.
Mm-hmm.
And the quote it ends with is from Manly P. Hall. So okay. I looked him up, and then I found this book, and I decided it'd be a fun read, especially with like the Carl Jung and the Joseph Campbell stuff I've been reading. So I picked up this like 500-page book. But like the last 22 pages are all index and reference pages.
Okay.
So,
yeah,
that's going to be my follow-up book to Chuck Wendig's Wanderers, which was a post-apocalyptic fiction book that I just finished up. That was 800 pages.
You're jumping of genres from nonfiction to fiction.
Back and forth, back and forth, man. I started out the year with business nonfiction. Then I did some Star Wars fiction. Then I hopped into psychology nonfiction. Then I did science fiction horror fiction. Now I'm back. I'm going all over the place.
Little this, little that.
Little this, little that. My goal this year was to try to read 20 books before the end of the year. I think I'm sitting at 11 now that I've read throughout the year. I don't think I'm going to hit that 20, especially if you pick up 400-page books.
Yes.
They're a little bit harder to get through than a little 100-pager.
Yeah, you need to get... Yeah, that's true. I had my New Year's resolution of 10, and I actually just looked at it recently. And I think I'm at, like, 2, and then halfway through, like, 2 or 3 books. I gotta stop doing halfway through. So I wanted to continue the Game of Thrones.
But here's the thing. If you don't like the book, there's no reason to continue through it.
I agree. But here's the thing. I normally like the books. I feel like I have my ADD kicks.
Oh, and you just lose.
Yeah,
so there's a couple books I haven't finished, but like the ones that are off the top of my head that I've definitely rocked out of this year, Joseph Campbell's Power of Myth, Adam Frank, who's a local professor over at U of R, he's an astrophysics professor, of Constant Fire, which was about like science and religion. I read one of Carl Jung's books. My fiction pretty much has been all... Chuck Wendig, I might be butchering his last name, but I read his Star Wars Aftermath series, which takes place between episode six and seven. His book Wanderers, I just finished. I've been reading Jason Aaron's Conan, which is a comic book, but I still count it towards reading. Just I don't consider reading a single issue as getting a book done for the year, because it's like 20 pages.
Yeah, it's like one of like the thin ones.
Yeah, I mean 20, 25 pages, a regular size comic. Eight of them that I read together, which are an arc, I would consider a book.
Okay.
A comic arc, I would say, is a book. Okay. And usually an arc runs anywhere from 5 to 14 comic books sometimes.
Okay. So that counts as one.
Yep, and I got to get Jason Aaron's King Thor in November. It's the end of his Thor run, and it's going to focus on old King Thor and his granddaughters. And then I'm going to take on this The Secret Teaching of All Ages, which was in the New Age books in Barnes & Nobles. So I'm getting into, you know, crystal healing and stuff, even though that's not what this book is about at all. But it falls in that New Age
section. You don't know yet.
I definitely... don't, because there's definitely some symbols written in here. Maybe I can do some summonings, connect to the ancient pyramids.
Pictures, man.
I mean, it's the annotated book, so there is pictures for references. Or I think it's called the Reader's Edition, is what they call this book.
I'm a fan of Reader's Editions, then, or whatever.
What is a Reader's Edition?
I don't know, but I will be a fan that includes... colored pictures, especially
some colored pictures of symbols. You know, and I'm thinking of picking up after this, if I'm going to continue with nonfiction-esque, I'm thinking of picking up either the Nag Hammurabi Library or a book about it, about the Gnostic Gospels, the Gospels that were found in Egypt in the 1940s. Like a Gospel of Thomas, the Gospel of Judah is in there, and they're Apocrypha, I think is what they're called, books not in the Bible, but they're Bible books.
Before, would you just jump into that, or would you buy a background book, or a lot of times I try, before I jump into something, I will read, like, the Wikipedia page.
So
but
I listen
sometimes I that it's enough information, and sometimes I don't know if it's enough.
Yeah, so I listened to a podcast on Gnosticism, and okay. That's what really got my interest. And I kind of want to read the books of the Bible that are considered the Gnostic texts. But I was thinking of getting more of a reference book in there where it has the readings, but it's also a scholar talking about the readings because...
You need like a reading the theology scholar.
Yeah, and reading
gives you the context.
Bible is hard. I've tried reading through the entire Bible, and I get stuck somewhere in the book of Genesis when you get to the begots, like four pages of, and Noah begot Thomas, who begot Jonathan, who begot, and it's like, why do I need to know this whole lineage of stuff?
Yeah, you need, like, a theology professor's book who gives you, like, the context of stuff.
Well, the Gnostic Bibles get into a really interesting concept, and they're part of the reason they're probably not in the Bible, that the God of the Old Testament is not the one true God, and that there is a God above that God, which is kind of like a giant brain. It's inanimate, and it created sub-gods, and one of them is the God of the Old Testament, and he created the world, but because he's not the, like, all-powerful God, he created a corrupted world, and that's why there's violence and materialism and all this stuff, and it's, like, just not Christianity as we know it at all.
Right.
And that's kind of why I'm interested in reading it, to kind of get the understanding.
I would need to do background before jumping into that.
Yeah.
I would need to know, like, when are they supposedly written? So how accurate do we believe that these are what these are?
Stuff you should know are... sorry, one of the Stuff You Should Know podcasts.
Yeah, one of theirs.
One of the many sub-branches of podcasts they have had a really good hour and a half podcast on Gnosticism. Right. And that's what kind of got my interest in that. And, yeah.
That would be an interesting one. That will also be a heavy read, though.
Yeah. Like, and I found out those two, both of the books I'm looking to get that are written more of a scholarly standpoint, are available on Libby, the library app. So for those, I won't have to buy $30 books. I can just rent them and read them on my tablet.
Now, I've seen this in the news, and I saw it in a couple different articles. Have book publishers been now trying to not give ebook rights to the library?
I did not read the article, but I did see that publishers are trying to pull ebook rights from libraries because books aren't selling.
Headlines.
Well, I think that gets into, there was an article I was reading about Barnes & Noble's. It's up for sale, or it's been sold, or I can't remember 100%. But the guy who either bought it or was looking to buy it owns a branch of bookstores in the UK. And in, like, the early tens, aught-tens, whatever we're calling it now, 2010s, this bookstore chain was doing really bad when he bought it.
Mm-hmm.
And he came in and he redid the entire book chain. And one of the things he did was he kind of made each bookstore, though it holds the name of the company, a local bookstore. He gave the store managers more purchasing power, more rights to put on display what they want to put on display.
Oh, okay.
And it's not, you know, Penguin Random House coming to you and being like, I've got this book coming out this month, I need this right when you walk in the store.
Right.
The store manager might go, that's a book about, I don't know, the Ten Commandments. That's not going to sell here. It's a mainly...
We have 10 of those already on the show.
Right. That's not going to sell here. And so it gave each store the purchasing power of being a corporation while making it so each store could kind of be locally maintained, more co-op-esque.
That'll be interesting to see how that goes. I should use the library more often. I do like going to Barnes & Noble or local bookstores. I like when the libraries do. I actually just went to
the sales.
The sales. I picked up too many books. Now I have too many books just sitting around, and I don't know where I got the time, but I spent like, I think it was like $6.50, and I had $7. I didn't have 50 cents change, and they're like, we'll get your change. I was like, I don't need 50 cents. It's and 50 it, it, cents. It was like, I think I had like $6 or $7. I was like, no, you can keep that. This is like a fundraiser.
I want to get, I really like Libby. That allows you to get the ebooks through the library.
Super cool.
Especially with a tablet. That makes easy reading. And then, on the Brighton news, I'm thinking of going to one of our town hall meetings, which is right over in the library area.
What are you going to do?
I don't know. They have bi-weekly, the second and fourth Wednesday of every month at 7 p.m. The chamber gets together. The council gets together and holds a meeting, and they talk about the state of Brighton and what's going on. So I've been thinking of going to that for a while now.
I'm going to go protest.
I don't have anything to protest, really.
Yet.
Hey, you know, there's too many bushes sitting in my street because you don't do bush pickup enough. And on top of that, can you implement alternate street parking so people aren't parked all over the freaking road and you're dodging cars while trying to get to your house? I mean, it's not a real complaint. I just want to see what would happen there. So,
The potholes.
Brighton's potholes aren't that bad, though.
No.
Monroe Ave could use a good, like, repaving, though.
See, I don't know what that those type of meetings, but every time, like, I just think of those meetings, I think of, like, a Park and Rec episode where they're doing, like, their town halls, and someone just stands up and just starts complaining about a random topic, and you're like, this is not even what we're talking about.
I'm in a filibuster using Star Wars references.
Someone take the mic from this guy. Who gave him a mic?
I don't know. I'm thinking of going to one of those, though.
See what's going on in your local government.
Yeah, and I've got my application that I've started to Roberts to get a master's in strategic leadership.
Nice.
That would be, I'm looking to start in April. It'd be 18 months, 1 4-hour class a week, Wednesday nights. At the end, I'd walk with a master's in strategic leadership. Doesn't require a GRE or GMAT to apply.
Ooh, that's nice.
So, because it's a business degree.
So it's a master, so MA or?
MSL.
MSL.
Master's Strategic Leadership is what it comes in. You know, officially, I could put those initials after my name once I get it. You know, I could become Jake Duell, MSL. And people be like, what's an MSL? We know MBA, all these other ones. But officially, I could put MSL after my name.
Ooh, have you compiled and sent it in the application? I started the application. Still working on it.
Yeah, so what's stopping me is I got to clean up my resume because I just got the new job in February. I'm trying to get the new job details into my resume and make that a little more cleaned up. And then I have to request my transcripts from Brockport. So
you're going to like request it, and they're going to be like, you had that parking ticket for $25, and your late fees are $100,
so
and we're not releasing your transcripts until then.
It wasn't that, so I have no parking tickets or any of that, because I've had to do my transcripts before.
Okay.
But it's like, request your transcripts online. Perfect. Go to angel.com. All right, I remember my Angel username.
I would not.
It's like an 800 number. It's burned into my head, so I remember that. What's your password? This? Nope, not that. This? Nope, not that. This? Nope, not that. All right. Reset password. Your email address was from before we were using Gmail. You will have to call the bursar's office to request a password reset. I'm like, damn it.
Right. I don't even know what email system they used back then. But right.
It was whatever they were using, and now they're on Gmail.
All
companies,
I think, are on Gmail now.
Like, whatever, like, my jduel@brockport.edu is not an active email address anymore.
No, I don't even know what mine was.
Which I think that's weird, because I think the Gmail ones now, you get those for life. Like, I don't think they terminate those at the end of the school.
No, they definitely don't.
You'll always have a brockport.edu email address if you want it.
I would think at some point someone they would get deactivated, but I don't think they do. I don't know.
I think you have the ability to, like...
Continue it
or something.
I know, I still have access to mine.
From Buffalo. UB?
Yeah. From Buffalo. I still use it regularly. So I don't know. One day it's just going to be
locked. At the Nike store and they're like, I need an email address for this coupon. plavy@buff.edu.
Yeah.
Throw it there. I'm never going to check that email address.
I know. I should have fake emails to give to these companies.
You know, I had one. Now I don't. I got to get a new fake email address for that type of thing. Jake'sadvertising@gmail.com. What is that? Well, it's where all your advertisements will go into, because I don't care about them.
Jake'sStoreDeals@gmail.com. All the store deals go to this.
All the store deals.
Even though Gmail has the promotions, it doesn't catch everything. And this way, I know I will never check your deals.
Who was it? I was reading somewhere that one of those store deals, they made their unsubscribe button a photo so that Gmail can't catch the unsubscribe button.
Yep. Oh, getting crafty. Getting crafty.
Very crafty. Well, I think we should end segment two here and go to a break, especially since the wife is not home yet and I don't know when my daughter's going to wake up, so I'd like to try to get through all three segments in this session. So let's take another quick break. Hey, we're back again, and now it's time for segment three. So we're going to talk about something like on topic. We both read an article, and
we will attempt to be on topic.
We will. I think this one will give us a little bit of room to flow off topic. But we both read from the August 2019 issue of National Geographic. The issue is called A World on the Move. The article we're going to talk about is The First Europeans Weren't Who You Think by Andrew Curry. I got National Geographic every month. I usually flip through it, quickly read some of the shorter articles. This article caught my interest, and I started reading it, and I quickly found that it was a interesting take on white nationalism without being labeled an article trying to take down white nationalism. And with all the issues between white power, white nationalism, the protest in the street, people shooting up buildings because they're worried about their white identity being attacked, this article was just extremely interesting to me.
Great job, Nat Geo. Relevant.
Super relevant. I mean, it was a whole issue about people, migrants, so.
The whole issue was.
Yeah, they usually have a theme per issue, so there's space. The issue coming out this month is about the Antarctic warming up, or just global warming in general.
Okay.
They had a whole issue about cities and the future of what cities will look like, so this one was all about migration.
This one, interesting. Think about like relevant nowadays, but also like it's bringing history to the present.
Yes.
It's like historical trends, history on how we developed as civilizations and humans relevant to present day events.
Yeah, so I kind of want to start off with focusing on how this was kind of a takedown of white nationalism. They talked about the history of Europeans, where Europeans came from, and a lot about how there is no such thing as a white race, that it is all of Europe was a land of immigrants. And I got a couple quotes from it. The first is from, I'm going to butcher this name, but Kristen Christensen from Gothenburg University. And it said, "To me, the new results from the DNA are undermining the nationalist paradigm that we have always lived here and are not mixed with other groups." He said, to finish it up, "We're all Russians and Africans," because that's where a lot of people came from, and I've done 23andMe to kind of figure out where my dad's family came from.
And you did the 23andMe?
I've done 23andMe. Oh, right. So I know my mom.
What are your results?
I'll have to pull them up as we talk about it. So one of my more interesting results is I'm highly Neanderthal. I like fall in the 90th percentile for Neanderthal DNA.
Okay.
Which I thought was interesting. But I am half Italian from my mom.
Okay.
I knew that was coming.
Yeah.
And from my dad, I am very British, like London British, which kind of disappointed me. I didn't want to be, you know, London British, like British as British could be.
Geez, just insult the second biggest city in the world.
I know. It's just like, you know. My dad's family, I was trying to figure out where they're from. They've been in America since before the Civil War. And it was obvious it was probably going to come out British, but I just thought maybe Scotland, Wales, one of, you know. But I'm like, London, you know.
I'm sure that there is a ton of British around the world.
I mean,
they were so big
and
settled so much.
So here's my breakdown. Total 47.4% Northwestern European. From that is 25.6 from British and Irish, 9.1 French and German, 12.8 just broadly Northwest Europe.
Northwest.
Southern European, 33% Italian, 2.9 Spanish, 0.3% Greek, 10% broadly Southern European, and 5.4% just broadly European.
Okay.
Then you can
get
go in.
A little bit of all of you.
I'm very. But then you can go in and it tells you like
where
in Britain you are, and it's like Greater London, Norfolk, Kent, Merseyside, Greater Manchester.
Really?
Like British as British could be. And then the Italian, you can go in and it shows you your regions in Italy that your DNA is most likely from. And I got Abruzzo, Sicily, Campiana, Calabria, and Tuscany.
So there's that. No surprises.
No surprises on
no
the.
No surprise.
A little bit on the Sicily, but the Abruzzo is exactly where my grandparents migrated from. That territory. No surprises there.
Matches family
what the
history.
Family thought. There's no family surprises there. My mom took 23andMe. I've got 50% of her DNA according to 23andMe.
Yeah.
Zero surprises.
No shocks.
Still haven't really been able to figure out, you know, a ton of my dad's history, where they came from, other than Europe. Why they came to America, what all their deal was. But yeah, Neanderthal.
He must be the British.
Yeah, he's the British.
He's the British.
I got to get him to take it to see what he comes out at. That'd be really interesting.
Yeah, right. Well, he's probably.
And I found
yours,
a lot of his
Bridget.
Relatives, because it gives you relatives to you, and almost all my related relatives are through my dad, because it's not showing through my mom, so that'll help. But it also gets you Neanderthal variants, and I've got 303, which is 88% more than the standard 23andMe customer.
Now, what does that mean? I should know. Now, Neanderthals, you have your different...
Yes,
human, basic humans.
Yeah, so just like dogs, there's
different species.
So humans are Homo sapien.
Yep.
And there were different species of the Homo gene, Homo erectus, I think, Homo neanderthalus. The names might be wrong.
Right.
But Neanderthals were a different group of human or Homo sapiens. They got wiped out by Homo sapiens, but there was interbreeding before they got wiped out. So I have some of that Neanderthal gene from before then.
Now, does that predate like locations or
yes?
Was it like Neanderthals were popular in European?
So, I mean, yes, Neanderthals are popular in Europe. They're probably the original settlers of Europe before Homo sapien came in from Africa and Russia, from what I understand.
Okay.
But when we're talking about predating, we're talking 10,000 plus years ago. Right. We're talking before a country like Europe or like Britain existed.
We're talking pre-civilization.
Pre-writing, pre-civilization. Yeah.
Pre-city.
Pre-Bronze Age, I think.
It's gotta,
maybe.
It's got to be.
Even.
It's got to. Weren't they like nomads?
Yes. They're, yeah. And
I would, maybe I'm wrong, but I always picture the like hunter-gatherer. That is like the hunter-gatherer age. I don't know.
But I mean, like, the other interesting thing, especially talking about this article and then 23andMe, I mean, if white nationalists really wanted to be proud of something, how Neanderthal are you? I mean, I guess if you're talking about the original Europeans, I think the Neanderthals were, and I could be wrong on this, but I think they were the original Europeans. But there's no such thing as, like, this pure white race. And I think that this article was proof to that.
That makes a lot of sense. And especially, like, you can look at America nowadays. They always say we're a melting pot, but every country's been a melting pot since the beginning.
Yeah, I think, in the same article, there was a guy named David Reich who teaches at Harvard that said, the people who live in places today are not the descendants of people who lived there long ago. There are no indigenous people. Anyone who harkens back to a racial purity is confronted with the meaningless of the concept. So yeah, we've always been migrants. And
right.
I find it interesting because borders is even a thing that's like more recent. There weren't borders 10,000 years ago. People just lived.
I'm sure there were areas.
Yeah,
there were no written borders. Well,
yeah,
where,
there was no map that said, this is Neanderthalus. This is...
Yeah.
It was just areas that... Right.
This is the lake area. This is the cave area.
But it wasn't... And people didn't have maps back then. They didn't have official borders. It wasn't until agriculture and civilization that people started thinking... I think even... I mean, this isn't 100% proven, but people started thinking about land as property. And once land became property is when you start getting to the concept of borders. Because once land is property, you need to protect your property. Well, this is mine. It's not yours.
Yep. This is my land. What is your land? Now I have to actually mark off and set up my boundaries to prove that this is my land, not your land.
Actually, when it comes to land, there's an interesting tall tale myth. I think that I heard in college. It was a Native American story, I want to say. And it was from when the Europeans started coming over. And a European started, you know, came to a culture and was like, this is my land. And they're like, it's not, but we'll give you a plot of land. Here's the... simple thing, we're going to give you four flags, and whatever falls within that four flags is yours. But the only rule we have is you're going to start tomorrow morning at sunup putting your flags down, and by the time the sun goes down, you have to have all four flags in the ground, or else you forfeit all of your land. And it ended up being the tale of a greedy person who went too far, needed too much land, and he never got the fourth flag in the ground. And I mean, I think I might be misremembering it, but I found that to be an interesting story.
Go too far within the 24 hours.
Yeah.
Right.
But yeah, this article was just really interesting. What were your takes on it?
Interesting to, you know, you got to think about context, about, I would try to do a little background reading about, like, origins of civilizations. So if you have, like, things that I was reading, it was, you had the Fertile Crescent. Middle East is where most of society started coming from. You have Africa, you have East. Like, humans were much smaller numbers 10,000 plus years ago.
Yeah.
Obviously, we're all related.
When it comes down to it, there is no... I think it's interesting, too, especially with the sprout of white nationalism and Nazism lately, that's happening, the concept that white has evolved. Like 100 years ago, Italian and Irish people weren't white people.
Right.
But now they are?
I don't know.
What? How does?
I don't know.
How does that happen?
I don't know if they would be included.
Yeah, well, they are now. They didn't used to be included, but they definitely are now.
I don't know. I think you would run into some people who would not agree with that.
Yeah.
Some people still would not include
Probably
them.
Not. It, yeah. But, I mean, it's interesting. I think this article was a very good read. I think it was a relevant read. Do you have any other takes on it?
Nope. All right.
So we're definitely working our way through phase three and doing a talk on it. So I want to end today in phase three talking about a line that caught my interest in the article, but really got my mind working on what else could be happening there. So they talked about migration and plague moving in, and there was probably a culture that was immune to some sort of plague. They brought it in, and it wiped out a huge part of the European population at the time. This was 10,000 plus years ago, but it completely changed Europe, and I think that is a lot where the fear of the other came from. So there was one quote around the fear of the other that was, defying every anthropological course, people were not having sex with each other. And then it says, fear of the other has a long history, which is true. So I think this article had a lot about that, fear of the other. But one thing that caught me was when they were talking about the anthropological viewing. There's about 500 years in the history that they can't put together. Something rapidly changed within 500 years. And for 500 years, a single person, a lot, even within human history, 500 years is a lot because humans haven't been around for a while.
Right.
But it kind of made me think, like, what if, like, 200 years from now, 300 years from now, something had happened where 500 years of our history were wiped out? Like, we think we're this huge technological world, but could you imagine if it was 2562, let's say, just some random year in the future, and you couldn't account for what happened from the year 1700 to 2200. Like,
right, you get like, you'll see, like, ruins and you, stuff, but like, you're like, what happened?
How quickly humanity has grown technology, the fact we have podcasts now and thing, just completely wiped off the face of the planet. You cannot account for a huge part of human, to me, the fact that there's like 500 years that you can't account for with what we have, I'm not saying they had microphones and podcasts during that, but that's a lot of history that you're missing.
It could have been an entire civilization.
It could have been.
With knowledge and
I mean, I think it
tools,
goes
technology.
Down to, I think we talked about the Ark myth before, a flood that wipes out like 500 years, gone.
Right.
Like, and with global warming and stuff happening, I won't discredit the idea of humans surviving through global warming, but maybe not before like a mass extinction event where our population is wiped out to 1% of what's left of humanity, and how much of our that surviving 1% would remember cell phones and stuff, but how long would you remember that stuff for? How long before you lose all this knowledge and it becomes the Atlantis myth of the great city of New York that people believe is fake? It just, that caught me, and I know it has nothing to do with the nationalism of the story, but...
Curveball. Stay on top.
Well, I figured we couldn't stay on top.
No, that is interesting. Yeah, and you think about what happens if global warming, or you have like a meteor or something that we don't know, or we part of the technology gets wiped down, or part of our records get wiped down. Also, as civilization continues to progress and progress, it's a longer history. It's more to know.
It's also more to lose. Like, I walk High Falls, and in the Genesee, there's these pillars in the middle of the Genesee that I'm like, I'm sure that was pillars to a bridge or something, but...
Could have been a huge company. Could have been the biggest employer of the time.
Yeah, I doubt it would be, because, you know, it's Rochester, but why are there pillars sitting in the middle of the Jenny?
Right.
Like, what were these for? It looks like they were obvious bridge pillars, but I'm also looking at it going, well, here's where RG&E used to be, and here's where the Jenny Brewhouse is. Those pillars don't take you up to the Jenny Brewhouse, so what were they taking you to? Because they take you into the side of a mountain or side of a cliff right now. It's just, it's so easy for us to lose a huge part of our history. Like, right. We think we have this consistent history, but we don't.
It's always in flux.
It's always in flux.
Always in flux.
Life is always in flux.
That's true. Complicated in flux.
Yeah. I mean, we're in another flux right now of, I think, people wanting to have authoritarians that rule over them, over democracy. I think democracy is always in flux, too.
Yes.
So.
Need a democracy quote.
I do need a democracy quote. That's not what I have, though, today. I just don't have a democracy. You know, next time, maybe we'll go a little bit further into politics. I think we did a good job not going too far into politics.
I do, too.
We normally do.
We had a breath of topics.
Yeah, we did. We did good. But, based on the talk about this nice, massive book here and me talking about apathy, I pulled up on my phone the lyrics to that song that I was talking about. So the song is called The Spellbook by Apathy. And the ending to the song is by Manny P. Hall, the author here. So I was going to go with that. So to end today, every religious, mystical, and philosophical sect has had exactly the same difficulty from the beginning of time. Where it is the person who really believes that the esoteric truths of life are some kind of secret, and it is possible to find a key, buy it, steal it, beg it, borrow it, through some way to get it. And that, by means of this key, we can suddenly unlock the shut door of the place, the palace of the kings.
I like that one.
Yeah. That's going to end it up for today. We'll find a democracy quote for next time.
It's always a pleasure, Joel.
It's great having you.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Let's wrap this up. Aww.